The best practitioner is going to use the skill with curiosity and compassion and love and hold space for your highest potential and not have this agenda of like being in a role of healer or doctor or whomever. And even if somebody does come into me with 12 pills that they take every day, just because that's not the way I live my life, I can still meet you where you are. I can still have incredible compassion and be able to be like, well, here's this other thing as well. And maybe the subconscious work that I get to facilitate helps it not be so difficult for somebody to be like, I'm going to live. I believe I'm going to live.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candice Ridardi, and today I'm joined by Krishna Avalon. Krishna is a licensed acupuncturist, certified holistic health coach, certified Psych K facilitator, pranayama breathwork guide, and somatic practitioner who has helped over 26,000 patients and clients achieve their health and wellness goals for the past 18 years. She currently specializes in subconscious transformation. Krishna's work is unique in that it helps people make changes that they have not been able to make through talk therapy or other styles of coaching that only work with the conscious mind. Her specific kind of subconscious coaching helps people expand their subconscious beliefs from what is limiting or self-sabotaging to empowering, helping people feel empowered as the creators of their lives. Krishna is passionate about helping people heal from past trauma and stress, break free from limiting patterns, and grow and expand in all areas of their lives. She is also a strong believer in the power of neuroplasticity, or the brain's ability to change. And she teaches her clients how to create new neural pathways in their minds so that they can create the life they want to live. Welcome, Krishna.
Thank you so much. That was a mouthful.
Well, I am really looking forward to this conversation around neuroplasticity because it's a new obsession of mine. But before we get into that, let's hear your story. What's your story? How'd you get to where you are today?
I mean, I'll just give you maybe the shortened, condensed version. And if you have questions, you can ask. But I've been a practitioner forever. I've been in the healing arts forever, probably lifetimes. I have been an acupuncturist for a really long time, successfully for like 18 years. But I think so many people needed to shift and pivot with the pandemic when my clinic closed for 9 weeks. And I had just started hearing about the subconscious mind probably a year or two previously. I'd been doing work myself and had tried the process that I've been trained in. Didn't necessarily feel any different, but I knew that I wanted to train in it. And so when the pandemic hit, I was like, I wonder if that woman is teaching those classes. And she was. And I trained here with her in this house. I ended up buying her house, which is like another magical story in itself. But did all three levels of training during the pandemic and saw shifts starting to happen in my life that were not possible before because I was only working with the conscious mind, which only creates 3% of our lives. And so when I had started hearing about the subconscious, I became obsessed because 97% of our lives, the subconscious is where our programs, our habits, our autopilot, our feedback loops, that's where those are stored. I did become obsessed. And this is the work that I knew I wanted to guide people in because the world shifted quite a bit, as you know, with pandemic, and a lot of people were in a lot of fear and trauma and not feeling safe. And so while I still see miracles happen every day, with the people I still see for acupuncture, it's really working with the subconscious that helps people peacefully unattach from those triggering, stressful, traumatic events, whether it's the past, the present, or the future, things that they're worrying about, and be able to move on, which is why this work for me is special, because other ways of working with the subconscious, you might be able to peacefully unattach from your stress or trauma and move on. But in this work, you can also create new programs. See, we are all programmed, all of us. And so it's a matter of what programs you are running in your subconscious mind, the lenses, the perceptions that you have that determine your life. And so this work allows people to create the perceptions and the beliefs that they want to have, which is neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to have a new experience.
I like that definition. So let's dig into that. How exactly can we, well, let's talk about the perception of the brain being static and then neuroplasticity and how, and why people believed for so long. I mean, I think hundreds of years, people thought our brains are just deteriorating. And the older we get, that we're going to lose our brain cells and we're going to just get dumber and lose our ability to think and all that versus what the reality is. So talk about that.
Yeah, it's so true. And I mean, neuroscience is newer in science. Epigenetics is new in science. But what people who are studying that are finding is that for most things, it's our perceptions that are even more impactful than our genetics. So I'm not talking about stuff that you're born with that you really cannot help. I'm talking about through life, if you have the perception that you are not safe or that you are separate from other people and you're othering or that there's not enough, that is going to be the life that you experience over and over and over because that's the program that you're running. And so we begin with, I believe, our time in utero, in our mother's womb, whatever she is processing when we are in her womb, maybe even before, if you're a spiritual person and believe in that kind of thing. But then we're out of the womb, right? And then we get this like conditioning, we're observing that first 7 years of our lives, our brain is like very malleable, very in what we call the theta state, where we're very impressionable. And so whatever happens after that point gets reinforced through our communities, our parents, our schooling, the programs we watch on TV. And that just like deepens and strengthens that belief that you're in, whatever it is. You know, if you listen to, I love to sing karaoke. And sometimes I notice that when I'm singing these songs and the words are up on the screen, I'm like, oh my God, that's what the words are. And we don't realize it. Like that's what's getting into the subconscious mind as we're like repeating these things over and over and over again. You're just reinforcing those beliefs. And so this work helps you undo those beliefs that are self-sabotaging, that are just making you create things over and over that are not agreeable for you. The places in life where you're hitting a lot of resistance and challenge and struggle, it's because your subconscious mind is contracted about most likely your deservingness or your worthiness, about healthy love, about being seen for who you are, about it's safe to be seen exactly as you are, about deserving money, deserving ease. I mean, these are like a lot of the foundational ones for people.
So this is what I'm hearing from you. 6 years old, you get an impression of yourself that, I'm trying to think of something that a six-year-old might think about themselves based on what adults around them are doing, that you're dumb. Let's say at 6 years old, you get the impression that you're dumb. And so you watch Sesame Street and you're reinforced by how dumb you are because you didn't know that eight comes after seven. Well, you're only 6 years old, right? And so then you're watching Family Feud with your family and you don't, you know, when you're 15 and you don't know the answer to a question. And so then you think you're dumb. None of those experiences actually prove that you're dumb. It's just your impression. It's you creating a reality around exterior circumstances that actually aren't true.
Yeah, exactly. And that's such a beautiful and great example because what we see gets reinforced because the subconscious mind and the nervous system's job is to prove to you that you're right. So if you get the thought or the belief that you're dumb, then the nervous system and the subconscious mind are going to find that information and show you, yes, that's what you're going to see, that you are dumb.
So what do you do? What do you do about it?
I mean, you're probably going to live your life for a long time. And if you're lucky, come across the tools that you connect with, the modalities that you connect with, or like maybe there are things that you can do on your own that will help you consciously understand, oh, okay, I'm not dumb. But then with your conscious mind, you're just trying to like talk yourself into it so hard because you're just working with your conscious mind. That's 3% of our experience. But if you find work that helps you with the subconscious, reprogram that, unattach from that stress of that experience, what that's like for you every time you feel like you're dumb, then you can move on and have a new experience. Like, oh, I'm actually smart. Oh, I actually understand a lot.
So what if you are an adult and you identify an eight-year-old is brilliant, but thinks they're dumb? What can you as an adult do if you're not their parent? Is there anything? Without overstepping the boundaries.
Right. I mean, you can certainly tell them, you can certainly show them, you can point out things for them, to them, that illustrate you're not dumb. They might receive it and hear it, but it would be more ideal to be able to have something to get in there deeper and be able to shift that experience before it just gets deeper and deeper and deeper ingrained in the subconscious mind.
Which is pretty much impossible if you're not a parent or guardian of that kid.
Exactly.
Yeah. I want to solve the world's problems.
No, for real life. And I am I'm a parent to a 14-year-old girl. And so that is it's a tricky time for me as a parent. And if I didn't have this work, honestly, and the modalities that I have, I mean, I'd be pretty distraught. I really would. I use this work in parenting quite a bit to peacefully unattach from stress, to use when I wish I could have been better, to reprogram, like, I'm not a failure, things like that. It's been incredibly helpful. And I get to work with other parents who the same thing want to be having a different parenting experience, but they're not present. They're not enjoying it. They can't seem to play with their kids. And it's pretty powerful work when I get to help people shift into, like, oh, it's safe for me to be present. Oh, I enjoy parenting. Oh, I can allow the house to be messy while I stay with my kids and play.
Well, a lot of that is I have to get rid of the crap in my head that I got from my parents and grandparents, right? A lot of parents today think they need to be just like their parents were. Well, yeah. If your parents sucked, why would you want to be like them? Right? Did you have a good childhood? No? Then let's not do it that way.
Totally. Totally. We do definitely create our lives based on those experiences that are. And a lot of people do. You don't have to know what your subconscious beliefs are. You don't need to know where you're limited. You can just look at your life and be like, where am I stuck? Where am I hitting a lot of resistance? And then also, like, where do I want to grow? What do I want to be experiencing? So those are like the two directions that I work with in people. And usually in a session, we're doing like both. Let's clear some stress energetically, sort of clear the slate, clear up your psychic space a bit, and then let's go in the direction of what you want to be experiencing.
So we talked about neuroplasticity being the brain's ability to change, but you also mentioned epigenetics. So what is that?
It's how we are absolutely affected by our environments. So our environment is a determinant about how we're going to experience life.
And that would be health-wise and subconsciously.
Yeah, and consciously and energetically and psychically and emotionally. And yeah, all this stuff.
So what are some interesting things that have come out of epigenetics lately?
Oh my goodness. I mean, they've done all kinds of studies on water, for instance. You know, if you know Dr. Masaru Emoto, I mean, he's sort of the OG in studying water, of how, you know, you put water, because we are 80% water, in like a war zone. How the water forms as a crystal when it's frozen, if it's in like a war zone, or if you play like some classical music that is just like beautiful and calm and inspiring, or if you like say I love you to water 3 times a day, every day for a week, like how beautiful the crystals form, how they are complete, whereas like those water crystals are shattered and broken and not even formed all the way in a war zone. So, you know, it's stuff like that that they're able to see. There are other water scientists out there now doing some of the same thing. But that's one of the way that they study an environmental impact on our beings that are 80% water. So
that's research has been around for a while. And I'll link to it in the show notes. There'll be a link to that research in the show notes, because it is very fascinating to see the photos of the water crystals before and after the I love yous and the nice things, you know, like, you taste so good today. You know, just, it's, I mean, it seems silly, but it, if you put it under the microscope, tell, you know, the microscope doesn't lie. So what else did you want to talk about?
I mean, I do love to talk about the difference between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. Some of my favorite things to work with are people who've been in talk therapy, for instance, for years and years and years. And while talk therapy saves lives and it's super important to consciously understand why things are happening, and it's important to be seen and heard for a lot of people, if you're still feeling stuck and angry and triggered and avoidant after years and years of therapy and you've plateaued, the conscious mind is 3% of how you're creating life. And often you're perpetuating the same story over and over and over again by telling your therapist or by having to see a new therapist and tell it all over again. And there aren't a lot of therapists that do work with the subconscious mind. There's EMDR, and that is a way that is their language is uncoupling, where you do things kind of similar in the process that I've been trained in a little bit, in that you are like crossing the midline of your body with either eyes, hands, or parts of the body to get the brain, the left and the right parts of the cerebral cortex, to communicate clearly so that there's not one side just ruling the show. But again, Psych-K is the process I've been trained in. I don't like the name, but that is the name, where you get to create new beliefs based off of what you want. And so those are my favorite people to work with, because they're going into their lives afterwards, maybe after a session or two or three or four sessions, and like their therapist even or their partners are like, whoa, what happened? You would normally be yelling. You'd normally be irate in this situation. You would normally not be able to just sit here and play trains or cars with your kid, like you'd normally be scurrying around the house thinking you had to clean the house. You know, those kinds of things that are really changing people's lives because they're changing their beliefs.
When you go to talk therapy, you're basically reliving the shitty thing that happened to you again. And that to me seems counterintuitive. I mean, why would you want to go through it again? Isn't therapy about releasing it?
Ideally, but you know, not to like crap on mental therapy, but mental health therapy in the world and definitely in this country, it fails people often. It's very much about diagnosing, which in my opinion might be helpful for some people. For me, I feel like it puts people in boxes and makes people over-identify with things that like might not necessarily be true forever, but people latch on to those things and those words. And then, yeah, you're not like necessarily working with like where you're holding that story in your body. You're not changing your beliefs necessarily. You might consciously be like, yeah, I deserve healthy relationships. But if your subconscious mind is like, no, you don't, because you've never experienced that, that you're going to keep creating from this contracted place because that's all you've ever known.
Yeah. I actually, several years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I got really angry. I was just mad at everybody. So mad. And it was a couple things going on. I mean, I've been living with metastatic breast cancer for 9.5 years. So at that point, I'd been in cancer treatment for 4 or 5 years. And we had moved to a new state. We live in the north now, and it gets dark earlier and it gets dark later. Like, so I wake up and it's dark outside, and you know, and then in the summertime you go to bed and it's light outside. And so the weather, not having the right level of light was messing with my, you know, my rhythm. And, I went into a psychotherapist because I wanted to talk about it. And he listened to me for 15 minutes and then prescribed an antidepressant. And, you know, it's like, well, what I really needed was just to talk about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that, I know that's the opposite of what I just said a minute ago, but I wasn't living through a trauma. I was just going through some stuff that mm-hmm. I needed to work out. Now, did the antidepressant help? Yes. Did I feel better? Yes. But, you know, did I need it? I don't know.
Right.
You know, I don't know. So it is a real, you do really, I believe that you do have to look at it holistically, you know, that you can't just come at it from one angle. There's got to be multiple ways. And I wish that our healthcare system would incorporate, you know, all sorts of different things other than just take a pill, have a procedure.
Yeah. Get a diagnosis and then just like stay attached to that. And yeah, I had a really terrible thing happen when I tried to find someone for my daughter to talk to during pandemic. She's having a rough time. I mean, she was 12. She was going through shitty friend experiences. And then like,
because she was 12.
Yeah. And braces and mouse stretcher. And then like, she gave herself a bad haircut and we had to shave her head. So she hid under half. Like, it was horrible. And I took her to the absolute wrong person. And that person was damaging. And so it sucks, but that is what happens. Like, we give all of our like power sometimes to somebody else to try to help us. And they don't necessarily have the tools or the direction or the medicine that is right for us. And sometimes people don't know that. I knew that. I was like, How dare you just put a label on her right in front of her at our first meeting? That is not even true. And we've been in a process of undoing that. Thankfully, I have found someone for her that has different skills now, but that's what happens to a lot of people. And it's really unfortunate. And I've been a practitioner for 21 years. Like, people come to me because I listen, I can see people, I read energy, I hold safe space. That's my gift in the world. And so now I have this like vast skill set to work with, but like, I know what people need because it's what comes to me. And this work, I feel, is so special because it's simple, Candace. You're conscious. It's not like hypnotherapy where you like come out of a session and you're like, okay, I feel relaxed, but what happened? And you don't have to do it for very long. You know, people who sign up for like 10 sessions, which is not that long, that's like my big package, their lives are entirely different. And so that's available. And so I just kind of want your people to know that it doesn't have to take forever to make big, powerful shifts. I have a lot of people who come in and they're like, oh, well, I've been like this for 40 years. It's going to take me a while to shift. Okay, but it actually doesn't have to.
You know what I like about Psych K? You're the second person, second Psych K practitioner that I've interviewed. And the first one was the complete opposite of you. She doesn't have any background in any other, you know, alternative healthcare training or anything. She just had a situation where she needed to deal with something, and she learned about this process and it worked on her. So she said, okay, I'll do it. So she became a practitioner, and she does not have the background that you have at all. Complete opposite personality, everything. But this modality is something that works, that she is using and helping people with, just the way that you are using it and helping people with a completely different belief system than she has. So Psych K is, I know the name sucks, but it is a process that's pretty remarkable. And there's a lot of competing modalities that are along the same line, but this one seems pretty intuitive and very fast.
Yeah. And I worked with emotion code a little bit, and I like that one too, because like, I love the emotions, but you don't get to create new beliefs. You don't get to create new programs. EMDR for me didn't work. Hypnotherapy for me didn't really work. Meditating, visualizing, repeating, that works. And you can, that stuff you can do on your own. And ideally you do that like first thing in the morning before you even get out of bed, when your brain is still in that sleepy theta state. And then before you go to bed, when you're sleepy, visualizing, imagining, connecting with the feeling, journaling, that is very powerful, especially when you repeat. It will take longer. Listening to self-hypnosis, you can do that as well. I haven't found one yet that I am into, because I'm like, what are they saying to me that I can't really hear? So I want to make some of my own and share them with people so that I know what's being said to my subconscious while I sleep. But it's really more effective, from what I've seen, to do something like Psych K. If there are other modalities out there, great. But from what I've seen and heard and experienced, like, for me, this is the way. There are three things in my life that I've been 1000% go for this. Yes, 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 yes. One was acupuncture school. The second was becoming a mom. And then the third was working with the subconscious and Psyche. So I trust 100. I can't remember what I was trying to say with that. But what I've seen is that it's very effective to do the heavy lifting with some Psyche, and then use things like visualization, journaling to reinforce this new program that you've just created.
Yeah. Well, and what I like is that you're replacing it with a new belief rather than just eliminating the limiting belief. I mean, because if you have a basket full of eggs and you take out three eggs, the basket has room to add three eggs. So you're either going to add those three eggs back or three brand new eggs. That's a pretty good analogy.
That's a really good analogy. I'm loving your analogies this morning. That's just so true. You want to like pile stuff on, or do you want to like make some space first? And when people come to me, they're often like, what else can I do? It's usually about doing less. Yeah. Honestly, you're freaking tired, go to bed. Yeah. You don't need to eat more supplements, go to bed.
Yeah.
If you feel overwhelmed, go to bed. If you feel overwhelmed, turn your phone off, you know?
Yeah. That's a good one. Turn the phone off. So I recently about 4.5 months ago, I was introduced, and I'm sorry, I'm going to throw something at you here, but I want to talk about it because it's about neuroplasticity. About 4.5 months ago, I was introduced to a technology that helps rewire your brain temporarily. In 2020, two scientists won the Nobel Prize in Medicine because they discovered the T1 and T2 receptors in your skin that receive messages that are sent to the brain. So this is a Nobel Prize winning concept. And I understand the skin to brain connection because I've been living with neuropathy for 9 years. And I understand that what neuropathy is, it's that my nervous system isn't communicating correctly. So I'm getting incorrect messages in my brain from different parts of my body, my fingertips, my toes, I get shooting pains in my legs. My ear feels like it's congested, or at least it used to, it doesn't anymore. But those are all because of the neuropathy, which is my nervous system, my nerves not communicating correctly with my brain. So I got that really, really well. Anyway, I was introduced to this technology, and it's a little 1.5-inch patch, and it has a code. There's a code on the patch that your skin reads, and the skin sends that code to your brain, and then your brain decodes it. And it does. There's 11 different patches, but it does everything from reduce pain to help you with stress, to if you're depressed, it gives you a little bit more joy. There's each patch does something different, but it really is working with that neuroplasticity, which is why I was excited to talk to you about this, because your brain doesn't have to be the brain that you have now. The brain that you have now can change, and we can do things like work with your subconscious, use a technology that will help rewire your nervous system. We can do these things. And the more time goes on, the more opportunities there are for these changes to happen. I mean, scientists are actually really digging deep into this technology right now, or this not technology, but this subject right now, this neuroplasticity, because wow, we can be smarter, we can be better than we are now. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about neuroplasticity. So why do you think people don't believe that we can rewire our brains?
Because they've never had that experience. You know, how long is that? We all know that phrase, that saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. That's most people's experience, but actually you can. And it's new science. You know, for me, like, I hear that you are very like into the research and the science, and I absolutely get that, especially given your experience with a lot of pain. And I'm so sorry about that. My brother deals with a lot of neuropathy as a diabetic. So I'm really sorry that you're in pain like that. But like, for me, it doesn't even have to be so sciencey. It's cool to it's super cool to gauge. But yeah, like for me, I'm very attracted as a practitioner, and maybe just an old person, that things can be simple, and things can be gentle, and things can be easy. And yeah, when that's one of the things that I'm attracted to with Psyche, is those exact things. And you can just, oh, wow, all of a sudden I'm not wanting to throw up, like thinking about that thing that was really painful. Now I can think about it and be like, yeah, that was horrible, but I'm able to move on, and I'm not even thinking about it that much. And if it does come back into my awareness, I'm not wanting to throw up. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, what I like about this is that you can come at it from different angles. Like, let's deal with the subconscious, but let's deal with the, there are people who want to take a pill, right? They just want to take a pill because they think the dark, I love my mother. I mean, my mother was a wonderful human being, but when the doctor told her that she had a year to live, she believed him, and she died a year later, right? She just believed everything the doctor told her. And even though she was an Asian woman, she never embraced anything but Western medicine. She was, only the doctor is going to be able to tell me what's right for me. And it made me, you know, it was a little frustrating as knowing that she believed that she was going to die. And the fact that she actually died a year later was just amazing, right? How often does that actually happen? But she believed it, so it happened, right? Mm-hmm. She made it happen by believing it. And I think I'm 9.5 years later. I mean, 9 years ago, I was told that I had metastatic breast cancer. I could have believed I was going to die in 5 years, but I'm still here, and I'm in great, you know, I have pain, but I'm alive. And I'm alive because I believe I need to be here, right? Wow. So we can program our brains, but a lot of people want something physical. They can't wrap their head around the metaphysical. They want something physical. to prove that it's working. And I, you know, so if you give them multiple modalities to help, you know, it could actually be the subconscious work that you're doing, but they're going to believe it's the magic pill that they took, right?
Totally. And the job of a really good practitioner is to not have an agenda. Like, I'm not trying to fix you or be attached to what your outcome is. Like, the best practitioner is going to use the skill with curiosity and compassion and love and hold space for your highest potential and not have this agenda of like being in a role of healer or doctor or whomever. And even if somebody does come into me with 12 pills that they take every day, just because that's not the way I live my life, I can still meet you where you are. I can still have incredible compassion and be able to be like, well, here's this other thing as well. And maybe the subconscious work that I get to facilitate helps it not be so difficult for somebody to be like, I'm going to live. I believe I'm going to live. I don't have to listen to this doctor and what they're saying because it's exactly true. Like, how often is it accurate when somebody in a doctor role says, yeah, you're probably going to have 3 months. Probably you're going to have a year. So doing that big excavating, heavy lifting with the subconscious work that is simple and gentle and often easy with whatever else somebody else wants to do.
Yeah.
Well, have surgery, do the AI, whatever it is.
All the things. I do my tri-weekly infusions. I go and get my shot. I take my pill every day, but I also do other things. Mm-hmm. You know, my thing is I'm going to do everything I possibly can to live for as long as I can. So mm-hmm. I'm going to do them all, you know, but the thing that really bothers me is acupuncture was so helpful for me when I was going through the chemo that made you really sick. And I, after a treatment, I would just go in to my girlfriend, Allison is an acupuncturist. I would go into Allison's office and she would put the needle. I mean, my husband would take me from chemo to Allison and she would put needles in me and I'd just sit there lay there. I couldn't lay down. I had to sit in the chair, but I'd sit there in the chair for an hour, listening to the relaxing music with the lights down and just letting it all go, right? Letting the needles take away the nausea, take away what, you know, all the things that were happening. And it was so beneficial, but it's not covered by insurance.
Yeah.
And imagine if you had acupuncture while you're receiving an infusion. Right. I mean, it would just be so nice. Or even, I mean, most people who receive chemotherapy do not know that if they sit here and do this, and this I learned from a massage therapist who specializes in chemotherapy, chemo massage or cancer massage. If you sit here and do this during your infusion, your neuropathy won't be as bad because the chemotherapy sits at the end of your fingertips and your capillaries. So you just push out the chemo, helps with the neuropathy, right? All these little things that you don't learn if you don't talk to somebody like Krishna or Allison or Jody, who taught me about the fingers, who are helping with the other stuff, right? My chemo nurses and my oncologist don't, although my oncologist is awesome. She actually knows all the stuff, but you know, most of them aren't trained in these other modalities. So being open-minded, plugging into people like Krishna, it's smart, you know? And why wouldn't you want to do all the things that you can do to make yourself feel better?
And that's beautiful that you are open and curious to receive what is available to you and what might help you. That is not everyone. Not everybody wants to say yes to things that could be supportive, and that's fine too. Have your experience then.
I mean, really, you have to figure out what's right for you. So this is the Gratitude Geek podcast. So let's talk about how gratitude helps your subconscious.
Yeah, so important. So important. If you have a lens of gratitude and you're grateful for what's in your life, your heart is open. You're in a state of receiving. You are focusing on that. You're growing that energy rather than everything that is missing or that you're in scarcity of or in lack. Totally different experiences. And the neuroplasticity and the work that I do, it's all about perception and lenses and programs. So as far as gratitude, there's not really a higher vibration. There's not really a more open or expansive perception or lens other than love. Love's right up there. But gratitude is as if you have you're not missing stuff. And you can imagine, like, that is the program that's often pushed, because if people are in lack, they're going to be searching outside of themselves for a pill, a program, something to like make them feel more whole, more complete, more happy, more pretty, like whatever it is that is, you know, getting messed up. So gratitude is like the ultimate state of being.
So people who don't feel grateful, who feel like they don't have anything to be grateful for. Homeless person, how does a homeless person go from being homeless to being grateful?
Isn't that the truth? I mean, I read that as, you know, I'm a spiritual person. I see things energetically. I see them as lessons that people are here to learn. Like, their soul is so brave for coming in, and that is their lessons of coming in with a very hard experience. And that's tough. And I look at that with like compassion and admiration, but they might not, that might not be their soul's contract for this lifetime, is to be in gratitude, but maybe they will. I meet like houseless people here in Portland all the time, because unfortunately it's very prevalent. Fortunately and unfortunately, some people say it's because the police are not as hard as them, so they sort of flock to here. But you know, sometimes we meet people that are really good vibes, actually, and maybe they're on drugs. Maybe they're like not on the horrible drugs that are making people zombies. Maybe they're on, but not always. There's a guy right down the street that we sometimes bring stuff to, because even though he looks so sad and obviously desperate, like when we bring him stuff, he's so grateful. And that makes me want to bring him more. So we think of him every time we go over there. So that's what I'd have to say to that. You know, when I see people on the side of the highway or at the intersection and they got their sign up, for one, if they have a dog, or they just, you know, like gets me, I'll reach for like the box of Altoids and be like, do you want these? And they'll be like, yeah, thank you so much. Awesome. Hope your day is great. Hope your day gets something, some kind of light come through for you.
Well, that's the compassionate part of it, which is, having compassion is really important.
Well, and having gratitude when your life is so crappy, like to me, I mean, that just like, that makes my heart grow. It's inspiring to me.
I had a carload of Girl Scouts, a minivan full of Girl Scouts. They were probably 8 or 9 years old, possibly 10. I don't remember where we were going. There's a homeless person on the corner. I took a sandwich out of my bag and I handed it to him when we were at the corner and drove on. Right. Handed it out the car door to him. Like 3 years later, same van, same carload of girls. We're going somewhere else. And one of them says, do you remember that time Miss Candace gave a sandwich to the homeless person? And that right there, I hope that that impression that I made on that girl is she has paid forward. Mm-hmm. I mean, if she remembered it 3 years later, I hope she keeps paying it forward, because I hope that I taught them compassion.
I just got goosebumps everywhere, because yeah, how often do they just get ignored because we can't handle it? We can't handle seeing them in their suffering. We have so much guilt and shame that we're not helping more, that we just like don't want to see it.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not like trying to go up to everybody who's like looks scary and is yelling and is obviously having like a psychotic episode, or maybe they're like very connected to the multiverse and there's some scary stuff up there that's legit. But yeah.
And there are people who do not want you to help them at all. Yeah. So you just have to respect people's space. I mean, being compassionate, it means you respect their choices, right? Yeah. I don't know. All right. We need to wrap up soon. So I always ask everyone who's on the show what your favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique is. So how do you market your business?
I love this question, because honestly, being an entrepreneur for so long, 21 years now, the best thing for me, given the work that I do, the best marketing is always me being in right relationship with myself, unplugging from media, social media, and like being in the like, try to rule the world with my mind. It's way more effective when I get in right frequency, when I do the things that help me ground, connect, release, listen to my own voice and whatever's higher. So for me, when I'm in nature, when I go on vacation, when I turn my phone off for any period of time, even a few hours, that is felt as a broadcast. So for me, as a practitioner, a person in the healing arts, someone who guides a lot of people, I will turn my phone back on and there will always be a bunch of people who've scheduled appointments. So you can tell when there are people on social media that are trying to front a persona, especially as coaches or healing practitioners, and there's just like something that feels off, it's because they're not integrated or embodied in a lesson that they're trying to say that they want to guide other people through. And that is obvious. You can't fake a frequency. So, you know, I know that's different for people who do different kind of works in like the technology or digital world, but honestly, Candace, that's where it's at. I've done so many things. I've spoken on a bazillion podcasts now. I do business networking. That is also really helpful to me. Like one-to-one connection where people get to know, love, and trust you, and then they want to tell the world about you. Very powerful. And then, yeah, just because I'm a practitioner and people to come to me for co-regulation in their own nervous systems to be seen and heard, if I'm in a really grounded, open, loving place in my own frequency, that gets felt.
Yeah, I that is probably the best marketing advice I've ever had on the show.
I love it.
And I've had a lot of people who specialize in marketing. But really, when you if you know who you are and you stay grounded in who you are and you show up as yourself, then the right people are going to be attracted to you and the wrong people are going to be repelled by you, and you will have a wonderful business experience.
For sure.
And you really do need to just, I mean, you do need to leave your office. Every day I have in between appointments, I get out of my office because I work at home. When you work at home, how often can you leave your office? But whenever I don't have anything important going on, I walk out of my office and I go do something else. So several times throughout the day, I am not in here. You know, I'm doing something else. I'll be folding laundry, whatever it is, just so that I can reset and come back to work. And once you've reset, you're better, right? And, you know, you're thinking about the pile of laundry on your bed. It's done and you're able to focus on what needs to be focused on. So yeah, getting in tune with who you are spiritually or whatever it is that you believe, then coming back to it and you will attract. I love that you said that you come back from going on a walk in nature and turning your phone on, you've got appointments. I love that because that's exactly how it does work. It's exactly how it works. Everything vibrationally is in order. Okay, this is your moment of gratitude. Krishna Avalon, for whom or what are you most grateful?
I'm so grateful for so much. The most thing that I'm grateful for, my health and my daughter.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs, building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player. Our theme music is track 14 by Rev Brock and Soul Lily. Be sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to the resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Krishna Avalon. I've been your host, Candace Rodarty. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.